Matt and Sam were toward the front of the crowd, followed by Hart. Jordan and Strep were not far behind. Only minutes had passed from the time of the explosion to the arrival of the crowd at the mine site. Dust was still drifting from the sky, covering the rocks and pieces of timber that now littered the ground. A wide area around the mine entrance had collapsed, leaving a shallow depression. Sam was watching Jordan out of the corner of his eye. He was surprised to see him so calm. At first, Jordan acted almost indifferent, as if he had joined the crowd out of idle curiosity. As he started to survey the wreckage, he turned to Hart.
Damn you, Hart! You accuse me of all kinds of crimes, and here you are destroying my mine! This really means war now.
Hart had his back to Jordan. Sam was prepared to intervene if Jordan tried to shoot the other man in the back. Hart seemed to not realize the danger he had put himself in.
Just shut up, Jordan.
Jordan started to reach for a gun he wore under his coat. Sam stepped forward and put a solid hand on Jordan's arm. He didn't say a word. Strep looked to Jordan for instructions.
I'll find you one of these days without your bodyguards. And when I do, I'll show you what happens when you push me too hard.
Just stop shooting off that mouth for a second, will ya? You can't possibly think I caused this explosion.
Hart's tone of voice surprised Sam.
Of course you said it, you bastard!
If you were a professional mining engineer, or even a half-baked one for that matter, instead of an empty-headed big city lawyer, you'd know I couldn't possibly have done this job. It's just too shoddy.
You son of a bitch!
Sam tightened his hand around Jordan's arm in a vice-like grip.
I agree with Hart. Shut up for a minute. I want to hear this.
Strep took a step toward Sam, then seemed to change his mind. He stepped into the crowd and started questioning some of the men who had worked in the mine.
I've been in and around mines since I was old enough to walk. I can set an explosion that would bring down a mountain or blow a fly from a cow turd and not get any shit on me. You understand? If I had wanted to destroy your mine, I would have destroyed it.
Hart walked to the mine entrance, picked up a piece of the rubble.
Look at the damage. Some of the explosive went out from the mine, hurting little except the surrounding dirt. Oh, it caved in the entrance, probably some of your tunnel, but no serious damage with lasting consequences.
All that's well and good, but a more important question is whether or not any men were in the mine at the time.
Sam watched Jordan's expression with interest.
Fortunately, as you might know, I've been moving my major operations to a different site. That means that there were probably no men in the mine at the time of the explosion.
There are at least two men unaccounted for, maybe three. They may still be in the mine.
I hardly think so.
Sam wondered. He stepped forward and placed his head on the ground at the mine entrance. A cold chill went up Sam's spine. He knew his own feelings about being underground. He could only imagine what it would be like to be trapped. He bent over and picked up a huge rock. Hart looked up from his studies.
Sam, what are you doing?
There's men trapped in there. We've got to get them out.
Jordan's men?
They're men. Just because they work for Jordan doesn't mean they automatically deserve to die. Are you going to help me or not?
Hart looked at Shanahan and his other men.
Get your shovels. Get your other tools. Let's get at least an air shaft to the men. If they're still alive, as Sam thinks, they'll run out of air in hours. If they're lucky.
Nobody's gonna believe it. You set this explosion not just to destroy me, but to make you look like some kind of hero.
You watch my back, Matt. If any of these jokers try anything, please shoot them.
Hell, Sam, you gave me the fun job.
At least you can't say I'm never nice to you.
This'll make up for leaving the camp for me to clean up.
Strep came forward, leading some of Jordan's other men.
Hold it. If you come any closer and I'll kill you.
Strep reached down and picked up a shovel.
Hell, we're gonna help too.
As Jordan's men and other miners from the town temporarily forgot their arguments with Hart and his men and started to dig as well, Jordan saw that public opinion had turned against him, at least in this instance. Jordan also then half-heartedly joined in the effort. Matt also helped in the work, though he kept a vigilant eye on Strep and Jordan. The rock and soil worked its way into Sam's clothes. It caked his neck, back, and arms. It seemed to fill his nose and scratched his eyes. He tossed his hat to Matt and tied a bandana around his head to keep the sweat from his eyes. The larger rocks that were loose, he moved to one side, using only the strength of his hands and arms. Others he had to pry out. Slowly, a hole was again being sunk into the mine. But was it enough? Would he be able to make it in time? He listened closer, but he had dug himself into a hole. He could now only hear the sounds of the others working around him. Sam had not been sure he believed in the old Cheyenne gods since he had witnessed the slaughter of his own people as well as the slaughter at the Little Bighorn. He was not even sure he even accepted the white man's god. But as he worked to save people he didn't even know who might in other circumstances hate him and want to kill him, he gave a few unspoken requests for help. The ground seemed to be closing in around him. He hated to be in such a tight spot with no escape route. He pushed the feelings to one side and continued to dig. He dug in the direction from where he thought he had heard the voices.
Jordan, is he going in the wrong direction? Doesn't he need to go more toward the center, where the dirt and rocks might be less packed?
Hell if I know. Not an engineer.
You said it right.
I have a man that does that job for me. Strap, find my engineer, Smithson.
Tell him to bring his maps.
Sam turned his attention back to the ground. Map or no map, he thought he knew the direction to dig. It was a matter of instinct. Sam wasn't sure how he had done it, but he was pulling ahead of the other men. It was now getting even tighter. It was difficult to maneuver his shovel. In frustration and anger, he started to pound a spot where the dirt seemed to be more loosely packed. The tiny spot dissolved into a larger hole beneath his feet. Sam pried more rocks loose, forcing the hole bigger.
I think I've got an opening. Send me down a rope.
Don't do it, Sam. If you go down now, you could also be trapped. Let us dig out some more to make sure it won't cave in on you.
No. The men down below can't wait.
Send him down a rope. He's made up his mind. If he doesn't get his way, he may come up shooting.
Somebody tossed the rope down to Sam. Holding his breath, thinking about the wide open skies of his ranch, Sam lowered himself into the pit. Melinda was in the hotel when she heard the explosion. She ran to the window. She watched as the crowd suddenly started rushing toward Jordan's mine site. A few minutes later, some of the men came wandering back, talking excitedly among themselves.
What's going on?
Somebody's blown up the mine.
Which one?
Jordan's.
What's happening now?
It's the damnedest thing. Oh, excuse my language, ma'am. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. Some men are trapped in the mine. That half-breed engine and his friend are leading the rescue effort. And that heart is helping.
The two men shook their heads as if they couldn't understand such an unusual situation.
Why aren't you men helping?
Why should we? We got our own claims to work. Why should we help Jordan a heart?
The two continued walking. Melinda stepped back from the window, a crazy thought entering her mind. She would go down to the site and help as well. It would be out of character for her, which would make it even better. She was tired of doing what Jordan wanted her to do. Matt had showed her that sometimes it's important to take chances, to reach out for something new. She looked to her clothes and realized she had nothing appropriate for such rough work. The closest she could come was a dress she sometimes used for her rides in the country. It would have to do. It was only a short walk to the mine, but it was long enough that many men in town stopped and stared as she walked. At the mine entrance, men were working with picks and shovels. Matt was helping, though he was also keeping a watchful eye on Jordan and his men.
Melinda! You get back to the hotel!
I came to help.
Didn't you hear what I said? Get back. Now.
In response, Melinda bent down and tried to pick up a stone. It was heavier than it looked, and she almost dropped it. Matt walked over and took it from her hands.
Melinda!
Matt backhanded him, shutting him up quickly and effectively.
I'm glad you came out, Melinda. There's plenty of men here to dig, but they sure could use some water.
I'll get some right now.
Melinda ignored Jordan as she walked away. Jordan looked at Matt with hate in his eyes. Matt ignored Jordan as well. Hart joined Matt.
Guess I'm really ashamed of myself now.
Why?
Even that girl is helping out. And here I am doing hardly anything.
You're digging.
Yeah, I know. But Sam's down there by himself. And I know how he feels about being underground. If I went down there, I might be able to help with some of my engineering experience. Or with my strength. I don't like to brag, but I can hold my own with any man in this town, pound for pound.
So what are you waiting for?
Wish us luck.
Sam had been concerned about being able to see down in the shaft, but his eyes adjusted to the gloom, and enough light was now entering the opening that he could make out most of the features of the mine. As Hart had suggested, only the upper part of the mine had been blown. It had blocked the entrance, but further below, where Sam now was, little damage had occurred, except for the rubble that had rolled onto the mine floor. He wondered if Hart could have set the explosion to allow himself to be a hero. If so, then Sam was a bad judge of character, and Sam was seldom wrong about men. After a few more steps, Sam saw the men. One was spread eagle on the floor. Blood was seeping from a wound on his head where a falling rock had hit it. Another was trapped beneath a support timber that had fallen. Sam examined the bleeding man. He was breathing, but barely. Sam ran back the short distance to the opening.
Send down a pry bar. While you're doing that, I'm sending one of the men up. He's still alive, but unconscious.
He hurried back to the unconscious man. Sam picked up the big underground miner as if he were a child. At the opening, he secured the rope around him as best he could. Sam knew that the move might kill the injured man, but it was the only chance he had to live. As the men above worked the unconscious man back to the surface, Sam picked up his pry bar and returned to the trapped miner.
Can you hear me? Can you understand?
The other man shook his head. He opened his eyes. His face was caked with grime. Sam looked over the timber. It was about 10 feet long and had somehow wedged itself tight against the mine wall. Ugh. Sam pushed, but it wouldn't budge an inch. He worked his pry bar underneath it at the end away from the miner. This time it moved a fraction of an inch, but increased the pressure on the trapped man. Sam removed the pry bar to reconsider. He looked back just as Hart appeared from the swirling dust. He was also holding a heavy bar that he could use for leverage in moving the timber.
What are you doing down here?
Part of the truth is that you made me damned ashamed up there. This feud with Jordan has me so rattled, I forgot that there's more to this life than gold and silver ore. A man's life is worth something. Even the men of the enemy. I thought maybe my experience and knowledge could make this job a little easier for you.
I didn't think you had that in you. I didn't know anybody in this town did.
Well, of course, the rest of the truth is that this would be the first and maybe only chance I'd have to take a first-hand look at Jordan's diggings. I don't think there's much ore here, but you never know.
Well, at least you're honest, and I could use your help.
Hart looked over the situation and quickly realized the problem.
I'll take this end, protect this man's leg. Will you pry from that end? With luck, we'll be able to loosen the timber enough for him to get out.
Sam knew that Hart was a strong man, but he didn't realize how strong until he applied his full force to the log. Finally, it gave way an inch, 2 inches, 3 inches. Sam applied his own force and the log suddenly raised another inch. Except the man had fainted and could not move under his own power. Hart also saw the situation. Sam watched with unbelieving eyes as Hart slowly moved position. He shifted so that only one arm was now holding the log. The muscles in his arm were like steel bands. With his free hand, he slowly reached down and yanked the unconscious man free of the timber. Almost as if they had been working together for years, Hart and Sam released their hold on the timber simultaneously. Dust filled the small space, covering Sam, Hart, and the miner they had just saved. The heavy timber falling to the floor of the mine made Sam feel as if the walls were closing in on him, sending a chill up his back. The last thing Sam wanted was to be buried underground. He forced himself to remain calm. Hart acted unconcerned.
Is there any danger of another cave-in?
Oh, there's always a danger. But I think in this case the danger is slight. Even with the explosion, it still seems pretty solid. Yet it'd still be a good idea to get out of here as quickly as we can.
I'll go along with that.
How's our man doing?
The dust had now settled enough that Sam could again see clearly. He kneeled beside the miner, who was trying to keep the pain from showing in his face. He wasn't doing a very good job. His face was pale and covered with grime. Sam checked out his leg.
It's broken. I've seen worse, though. What about your other leg? Can it stand any weight at all?
I'll try it and see.
The miner put his good leg under him and stood slowly. Sam and Hart let the miner support his weight on them.
Any more down there besides you and the other fellow we've already gotten out?
No, it was just Clyde and me.
They walked to the opening, which was getting larger by the minute. As they came into the slightly brighter light, the miner took a closer look at Sam and Hart.
You're that half-breed, Two Wolves, and you're Clarence Hart. I think I must be delirious.
You're doing just fine.
Oh, this is crazy. I was in that crowd that fought you a little while back. If I'd had the chance, I probably would have killed you. So why'd you save my life?
Beats me why I do some of the things I do. Maybe I was born crazy.
The miner's face was still pale beneath the dirt, but he was acting stronger without the weight of the timber resting on his leg.
I sure had it wrong about you, and I'll admit it. I can tell you one thing. If shooting between you guys starts again, I'm going to be sitting it out. Just because I work for Jordan doesn't mean I'll fight anybody on his say-so. Especially when they saved my life.
I'm glad to hear that. I hate to see people sucked in on the wrong side and have to pay for their mistake with their lives.
A lot of other miners will agree with me. Once they see how you jumped in to help, they'll probably not lift a finger against you either.
Throw down another rope!
In seconds, another length of rope was lowered. Sam started to tie it around the miner, who was still leaning on Hart.
A lot of us aren't too pleased with Jordan anyway.
He mistreat you boys?
Not any worse than a lot of other places. It's just that he doesn't seem very smart when it comes to mining. That's what me and Clyde was doing down here tonight. We couldn't believe our ears when we got the orders.
What orders?
Jordan told us to move our operations, to abandon this mine because it didn't test out. But hell, there's some good diggings down here. Nobody's found the main vein yet, but there's enough down here to make some tidy profits.
There, that should do it. It'll probably hurt like the dickens while they're pulling you out.
I can handle it. Go to it.
Take him up!
The rope tightened, and the miner moved slowly up.
You're next, Hart.
Not just yet. I want to look at something.
Sam shrugged, but followed Hart. The miner ran his hand along the rock wall, sometimes bringing his face close to it as if he were attempting to smell out the secrets of the rock. He finally found a spot that interested him. Hart found a chunk of rock on the mine floor and struck it against the rock wall. Two small pieces of stone fell off. Hart picked them up and put them in his pocket.
I'm ready to go now.
What's this all about?
These are samples I couldn't have gotten any other way. They might help me figure out where the main vein is, and if I'm on the right track. I couldn't very well let such a golden opportunity slip by me.
There's something else, Hart.
The miner tossed to the floor the stone he had been using as a chisel.
I'd say it's time we get out of here. I feel like it's been a good day's work. And it's time for a beer.
Strep paused in his work as Melinda approached him with a bucket of water. He had been surprised when the woman showed up to help in the rescue effort. He was even more surprised to see she was still around. During all the months that he had served as her informal bodyguard and driver, Strep had never seen the woman even hint at this side of her. She was a local celebrity, and she had acted as if she was a star. Strep knew Melinda was Jordan's girl, but he still had hoped against hope that she might someday acknowledge him as more than just one of Jordan's hired hands. Strep's gun was for hire, and he had not been particular in whom he had worked for. Even so, there were points where he drew the line, and if he could get Melinda interested in him, his working for Jordan would be history. However, up until now, Melinda had done little but look down her nose on him. Now, after only one outing with Matt Bodine, who seemed to Strep to be no better than a drifter, Melinda was acting as if she had a heart and a mind of her own.
Huh. No figure in women.
Melinda stopped in front of him and held out the bucket. Strep reached out and took the dipper.
I want to thank you.
Thank me for what?
For helping find me. I'll admit I haven't thought much of you these past few months. You were just kind of invisible to me. And I'm not going to tell you any lies. You're not my type. But I appreciate your effort.
Strep gave back the dipper. He wanted to say something, but no words came out of his open mouth. Melinda smiled and moved on to offer water to the next worker. Strep stared after Melinda.
That's disgusting. Try to be nice to a woman and they get out of control. Look at her acting so nice. I'll take care of her later. In the meantime, Strep, I want you back at the hotel in about an hour.
Strep turned to Jordan. Still stunned by Melinda's words to him, he wasn't paying close attention to what Jordan was saying.
What?
Don't tell me you got a case of the stupids, too. Do I have only imbeciles working for me? Be at the hotel in an hour. We've got some planning to do.
What about the men trapped in the mine?
Have you gone soft in the head? One's out. The other will be out soon enough, as if it made a difference.
Strep had had about enough. He had served Jordan loyally. He had protected Jordan's woman and helped to bring her safely back when she was kidnapped. He was still suffering from the bruises and cuts that he had suffered in his fight with Matt, trying to protect Jordan's investment. Strep's gun was for hire, but Jordan had taken it too far. Jordan had turned his back and was walking back to the hotel.
Arrogant bastard.
Strep took a deep breath and considered his options. The only way he could be near Melinda was to work for Jordan. He hated Bodine, and the only other option in town was to side with him and Hart's men against Jordan. His only real choice was to stay with Jordan. Phil Caphorn had taken his place at the table he had selected, where he had drunk down most of the bottle in front of him. He liked his liquor, could hold it well, and it never seemed to bother his gunmanship. Now he was thinking. Bodine's threats hadn't scared him. He had been threatened before by all kinds of men. They were now all 6 feet under. Still, there was something about Bodine that made Caphorn pause. He had faced tough men before. He had faced men who were speedy with a gun.
So what's different about Bodine?
And then there was this crazy town. Caphorn had been listening to the gossip in the hotel saloon and how Bodine's partner, Sam Two Wolves, had jumped into the action to heroically save two men trapped in Jordan's mine.
Well, who would be crazy enough to help his enemy?
More importantly, it seemed as if Jordan and Hart would have to confront each other. But Jordan was losing support. It would not make Jordan's efforts impossible, but perhaps more difficult. Of course, in the end, that was irrelevant to Caphorn. He had been hired to do one thing and one thing only. That was to kill Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. As soon as the gold was deposited in his bank account, Caphorn would meet the two blood brothers and kill them.
Meantime, I have some time to kill. Whiskey!
He motioned to the bartender to bring him another bottle. Sam had never valued the open skies as much as when he climbed out of the collapsed mine entrance. He hadn't realized how much being in the tight confinement had bothered him until he again breathed the fresh air and felt freedom. By the time Sam had loosened the rope that had helped bring him out of the mine, the two miners who had been trapped were stretched out on the ground and being treated. A few of the workers patted Sam on the back. Much of the hostility that had existed before the explosion that caused the mine cave-in seemed to be forgotten. Jordan would not forget, and Sam had no illusions that saving his men would cause a change of heart in Jordan. Sam looked around for the mine owner, but neither he nor his men were anywhere in sight. Matt was talking with Melinda, who was carrying a water bucket. Sam knew that Matt would allow nothing, not even a pretty woman, to interfere with his executing his tasks flawlessly. But Sam couldn't resist needling Matt a little. Sam stepped over to his blood brother.
Hey, I thought you were supposed to be watching my back. And here you are with all your attention on a woman.
Well, hell. She's a sight prettier than your back.
But what if somebody wanted to bury me in the bowels of the earth?
Mother Earth would just kick you back out. You'd be indigestible.
You two are something else.
Thanks for your help, Melinda.
Anytime.
Melinda walked away.
Are you really falling for a saloon singer?
She's not just a saloon singer. In answer to your question, I like her, sure. But it'll be a long time, if ever, before I ever consider settling down.
Just wondering.
With the excitement over, the crowd started to leave.
I don't think Hart set this explosion.
I think you're right.
And I don't see what benefit blowing up his own mind would provide to Jordan.
Right again.
So who's your guess about who set the explosives?
A friend with a bullwhip who kidnapped Melinda.
We need to find him.
Even if we find him, I doubt that it will keep Jordan and Hart from trying to kill each other. It's gone too far to change now.
I just want to find Parrish and take care of him once and for all.
Parrish was disappointed, and he was angry. So far, none of his plans had worked. He wondered if Bodine and Two Wolves were really that smart, or just damned lucky. Parrish was watching the action at Jordan's mine from a position on top of a rocky hill at the edge of town. From this vantage point, he couldn't make out details or hear the talk. He could only see Hart and Jordan working together to free the men in the mine. Sam Two Wolves was apparently taking the lead in the rescue effort. Instead of starting the two sides shooting at each other so that Parrish could pick up the pieces, both sides were apparently working together.
God damn it, what else could go wrong?
Hold it, Parrish.
The gunfighter recognized the voice behind him.
So, you finally found me, Shanahan. You gonna shoot me in the back?
Any reason why I shouldn't?
Oh, it's just not very sporting.
And what you did to me in the river with your bullwhip was sporting?
What are you gonna do with me?
Stand up. Very slowly. And turn around to face me.
Parrish did as he was told. Shanahan was standing with a large caliber older handgun aimed at Parrish. Shanahan was holding the reins to Parrish's horse.
We're going into town.
For what purpose?
You and I are going to have a little fight.
Matt and Sam stopped talking when they saw Parrish walking back into town. Behind him was Shanahan, holding a gun on him in one hand and the reins of Parrish's horse in the other hand.
How do you like that? Ask and you shall receive.
Shanahan got Parrish, and I didn't even hear any shots being fired.
Look at the vermin I found in the rocks. He was so stupid he didn't even hear me coming. Just as well. I didn't want to shoot him anyway.
What do you have in mind? We know he was the one behind the shots being fired at Matt, the kidnapping of Melinda, and probably the blowing up of Jordan's mind. I'm sure any one of a number of people would be glad to take this fellow off your hands.
I'm sure they would, too. But I have another idea in mind. But I'll need your help, Sam.
Name it.
I'm still stinging from the whipping he gave me in the river. I want to face him in a fair fight. I want you to referee. Make sure he doesn't pull anything underhanded.
I'd be surprised if he can do anything that's not underhanded.
Would you do that for me? It's a matter of honor.
I understand, honor. I'd be the last to deny you the pleasure. When do you propose this match take place?
Here, now, in front of everybody in town.
I'd be happy. You heard the man, Parrish. Take off your gun belt and put it over there by your horse. If you live through this fight, I'll let you ride away. Though I wouldn't be surprised if some of Melinda's admirers didn't come looking for you anyway.
Parrish looked confused. Shanahan was removing his shirt to reveal well-developed muscles. He wasn't big, but he was strong. Parrish removed his gun belt, placed it gently near the horse. He stepped over to his horse, pretending to rub it as he quietly loosened his saddlebag without anybody noticing. He figured he might need an ace in the hole.
So, what are the rules?
Take your best shot. I'll still beat you.
A circle had started to form around the two men in the street. As word got around, several bets started to change hands. Even Jordan and Caphorn came out to see what the ruckus was all about. Shanahan put up his fists and stood in a boxer stance.
Come on, I'm ready for you.
Parrish decided to leave his shirt on. He approached Shanahan warily, trying to get a feel for his movements and any potential weaknesses. The two men circled each other slowly. Suddenly, Shanahan's right fist moved in a blur with two quick jabs. Both hit Parrish in the head. He bounced back, shocked. He hadn't seen the blows coming. He only felt them when they hit. He started to watch a little closer now and missed the next blow. It was a left to the stomach. As Parrish moved, he struck out with his right, followed by his left. His right hit only air, but his left struck a glancing blow to Shanahan's ear. Shanahan danced back as if he hadn't felt a thing. Parrish moved in, dodging blows. He struck Shanahan's chest and stomach repeatedly, but they apparently had no effect on the Irishman. For each blow delivered by Parrish, Shanahan delivered a similar blow, with more effective results. Parrish started to feel the punches. He moved back out of range. Shanahan continued dancing around. Parrish moved in again, this time trying to throw his punches at the other man's weaving head. Each punch was effectively blocked by the other man. Parrish couldn't see how Shanahan did it. He was quickly tiring from the effort of trying to break Shanahan's defenses, much less from the repeated blows that kept landing on his body. As he tired, it seemed more of Shanahan's punches landed, draining him even more. During this whole time, Sam remained neutral. He watched the two men fighting, but said nothing and did nothing to interfere. Parrish wondered what he would do if he tried something underhanded. Maybe it was time to give it a try. Shanahan reached out with a blow to the head. Parrish went with the punch, fell to the ground near his horse.
Get on up. I'm not nearly through with you yet. This is just the start. You won't get off that easy.
Parrish moved slowly up as if he could barely move, using his horse for support. Shanahan, impatient, danced in closer. Parrish reached up to his saddlebags as if for support, but slipped his hand inside the flap. Matt was watching the fight with interest. So far, Shanahan was giving a good show. Matt was no boxer, but he had seen enough to know when a good fighter was toying with another man. Had he wanted to, Shanahan could have knocked down Parrish at any time.
Want to place a bet? There's still a few who are betting on Parrish. The smart money is on Shanahan.
No bets. Seems to me like there's no contest.
Matt glanced down and was surprised to see a bullwhip, similar to Parrish's, in Hart's hand.
What's this?
As you know, Shanahan's been looking for Parrish for quite a while. He's been planning this for just as long. He thinks that Parrish is going to try to get smart. He wanted to be prepared, just in case.
Does Shanahan know how to use that thing?
He's been practicing. He may not be as good as Parrish, but he can hold his own.
And why did he want Sam to referee?
Hey, you never know what a man like Parrish will pull. His weapons are primarily a gun and a whip. A whip Shanahan can handle, but a gunman he's not. It's always possible that Parrish would have a gun hidden somewhere. You never know.
That is true.
But I also think in some way, Shanahan wanted Sam to know that he's not a coward and not a weakling. Though he appreciated Sam stepping in and helping on the day you guys arrived, Shanahan thought that he was somehow less of a man because another had to help him out of the tight spot.
That's crazy. Took a hell of a man to face Parrish, unarmed and by himself.
You know that. I know that. But to Shanahan, it's a matter of personal honor. By having Sam referee, Shanahan figured it would somehow make his victory that much better.
A matter of honor. I hope it doesn't get him killed.
Come on, Parrish. What are you waiting for?
Parrish turned suddenly, the bullwhip in his hand. It barely missed Shanahan's ear. Sam stepped forward.
That's out. If you don't put it down, I'll be forced to take it from your probably dead hands.
No, that's all right.
No, I intend to keep this fight fair.
Like I said, it's all right.
Sam turned to see Hart handing a similar bullwhip to Shanahan.
If this piece of crap wants to raise the ante, that's his choice. I thought he might try something like this, so I made sure I was prepared.
Go to it, gentlemen.
Parrish stopped in mid-stride. What was going on here? He had given any number of whippings in his time, but had never faced another man armed in the same way. Well, how difficult could it be? He was the expert, after all. He would just show this stubborn Irishman how a real whipping felt. The gunfighter loosened his wrist. Shanahan was no longer dancing around, but moving around warily, holding his whip lightly in his hand. Parrish struck out, but his whip did not pop this time. Instead, Shanahan's whip also struck out, blocking the first whip's movement. The tips of both whips landed on the ground. But before Parrish could move, Shanahan had his leather in the air. The gunfighter looked down, saw his shirt was torn, and that blood had been drawn. A blood-red anger seethed through Parrish. Parrish was pleased to see blood on the Irishman's cheek, though he had yet to land a solid blow. His repeated blows to Parrish's body and head had exhausted him, reduced his strength and his reflexes. It kept Parrish from working at his usual level of ability, while Shanahan was still relatively fresh. Parrish's muscles felt like they were turning to rubber. In the fights he had been in, he had never taken such a beating and remained standing. He had never had to fight for such a long period of time without a rest. As if sensing Parrish's weakness, Shanahan moved in. His whip landed repeatedly on Parrish, tearing his shirt to pieces, making bloody the material that was left. The pain started to build in Parrish's body, joining with his fatigued muscles to scream in agony. Almost in a panic, Parrish lashed out with a blow that entwined the tip of his whip with that of Shanahan's. For a moment, they were knotted together, making each of them useless. Parrish jerked his hand, pulling the whip from Shanahan's hand. Parrish tossed down the useless whips and dived at the Irishman. He grabbed Shanahan's knees, forcing him to the ground. He moved in, tried to land blows on the man beneath him. Shanahan still somehow managed to block them, even from his difficult position on the ground. Shanahan arched his back, then flipped the other man over his head. In seconds, the Irishman was back on his feet. He reached down, grabbed the bullwhips, shook his loose.
How's it feel to be on the receiving end?
Shanahan could have killed Parrish anytime he wanted to, but his purpose was more to teach him a lesson than to kill him. Parrish tried to get away from the blows, which seemed to hurt far worse than they should have for landing no harder than they were. He crawled, tried to run, then fell under the barrage that never seemed to stop. Finally, he was where he wanted to be. His holster was only a few feet away, with the handle facing him within easy reach. He rolled the remaining few feet, managing to touch the gun handle.
Stop right there, Parrish.
Make another move and I'll shoot you.
Parrish glanced up to see Shanahan standing quietly, whip in his hand. Not far from him was Sam. His gun hand was steady, inches from his gun, ready to draw and shoot if Parrish made any further move for his gun. Parrish paused, his fingers barely touching the gun handle. It might as well have been inches or feet for all the good it would do him now. Sam was fast, maybe as fast as Parrish in a fair fight. But Sam now had the drop on the gunfighter. Shanahan looked over at Sam as well. The Irishman had a puffy eye and a bloody mouth from the fight. The gunfighter, however, looked worse. His entire face was puffed out and bloody. His clothes were torn, with streaks of blood showing where the whip had touched him. His hair was matted with sweat and blood.
This is my fight, Sam. I've been looking for this Yahoo for days. You stay out of this.
No can do, my friend. I respect your need to fight for your honor. I feel you've given this fellow back all he gave you and more. But I'm not going to let him shoot you.
Shanahan blinked, his fighting blood still raging through his veins. He took a deep breath and seemed to see clearly again. He saw Parrish's hand on the gun.
He can try it, but I'm through fighting nice. This time I'll kill him with my bare hands.
He held up his strong hands, calloused from work and many fights. Sam had no doubt that those hands could break a man's neck. Sam knew that Parrish was quick and clever. He could still draw fast enough to plug the Irishman before he could get his hands around the gunfighter's neck.
Flesh and blood are no match against lead. You've done your part. You've taught Parrish a lesson. Now it's time he was taught his final lesson. Maybe it'll demonstrate clearly the futility of trying to go against me or my brother.
Speak English!
I'm going to kick butt and show anybody watching what'll happen if they cross us.
Sam directed this last comment to Phil Caphorn, who had been watching the fight in silence. He knew better than to think it would worry Caphorn, but it might make him pause. It might be the slight advantage he or Matt would need.
I have some beefs to pick with Parrish as well. Matters like blowing up a mine, like kidnapping Melinda,
which caused a shooting fight that could have caused me to get killed, like shooting at my brother. That gives me enough claim to Parrish.
Shanahan's breathing had become easier as he calmed down. Parrish's hand remained on the tip of the gun handle.
All right, Sam. You can shoot this dog if you want.
Shanahan stepped back into the crowd, where Hart was waiting with a towel and a bucket of water. The Irishman started to dry himself off. The crowd seemed to move farther back, out of the line of fire, leaving Parrish more alone than ever on the ground in the middle of the street. Caphorn was leaning against a post on the porch of the Jordan Hotel, watching the fight with interest. In his pocket was a message from his banker that had arrived a little earlier, telling him the gold had arrived safely. He could now confront Sam and Matt when he felt like it. He was waiting now to hear Jordan's plans and to watch how Sam and Matt handle the fight between Shanahan and Parrish. Parrish had been a disappointment. Just another man who was a little faster with a gun than most others, but who lacked what it took to be a real fighter. Caphorn was amused at Sam's talk, which Caphorn knew had been directed at him. He had seen various men partner at different times in the West, but the bond that existed between Sam Two Wolves and Matt Bodine was unusual. They worked together well. They trusted each other. More importantly, they seemed to like each other. And there was some other element that Caphorn could not define. It was something beyond his experience and understanding. Even now, Caphorn watched as Matt moved quietly, without comment or drawing attention to himself, to back up Sam. Matt was positioning himself to get a clear shot at Parrish should he try something else sneaky. Caphorn knew instinctively, however, that he would not double-team Parrish, as many other men would. Sam had called the fight, so Matt would not interfere, though he would not hesitate to attack if Parrish broke the unspoken rules even a little. What was even more impressive to Caphorn was that Matt had also positioned himself to keep an eye on him as well. Matt was very clever. He was the one who had initially challenged Caphorn. He was the one Caphorn would have to face first. Though he had been paid to kill Matt and Sam, Caphorn knew that he would not have to go looking for Sam. Wherever Matt was, Sam would also be backing him up. These two men made quite a team, with a bond that seemed stronger than blood. In a way, it would be a kind of a shame to kill such unusual men. But then, a job was a job, and this would help his reputation. It would help keep the gold flowing into his bank account, which was the most important thing. Now, Matt had positioned himself and was apparently ignoring Caphorn. The gunfighter knew, however, that if he made a move for his gun, he would be facing flying lead from Matt, and then probably also from Sam. Caphorn kept his hands in plain sight. He wasn't ready yet to deal in death with Matt and Sam. That time would come soon. Very soon. Parrish listened to Sam's talk, his hand motionless on the gun handle. He wished now that he had taken Jordan's original advice and left town. Maybe his reputation would be tarnished, but at least he would be alive. He couldn't believe all his plans had failed, that it had come to this. Ridiculed by Jordan, fired by him as if he were an ordinary employee and not a hired gun. Beaten twice, once by Sam and once by Shanahan. Now he was trapped like a rat, with no escape. The gunfighter knew he was fast. It had made his reputation. But Sam was also fast. Sam and his partner, Matt, also had something that set them apart from all the other men he had faced. They laughed and enjoyed life and faced death as if they had no fear of death. They faced fistfights, mine cave-ins, and shootouts with the same easy style that they brought to their drinking and partying. Parrish felt a sinking feeling in his stomach. He was in a corner. He would have to shoot it out with Sam. He had been called. If he slithered away now, he would truly be a laughingstock. Nobody would take him seriously. He could just as well be dead.
Well, Parrish, this has gone on long enough. You have the reputation as a gunfighter. Let's see you put your money down.
You have the edge on me.
Parrish was very tired, hurting from his beatings, and he was getting more and more worried. He thought maybe he could talk his way out of this situation.
I know it. I'm not one to take an unfair advantage. I'll give you a fair chance.
Oh, that's sporting of you.
I think so, too. You're as bad as Jordan, maybe worse. I should just shoot you and not worry about it. But I'm giving you a chance. That's more than I should probably do.
What's your proposition?
Pick up your gun belt. Strap it on. If you're as fast as you think you are, you shouldn't have any worry.
What about Bodine?
He'll stay out of it. Unless you try something underhanded. Then he'll shoot you and be happy about it. He took it kind of personal when you took his girl.
She's not my girl.
Whatever.
Do I have a choice?
You always have a choice. If you want to get on your horse and ride, I won't stop you. But then everybody in the West will know you're a coward. And I wouldn't be surprised if our paths still cross at some point. I have a long memory.
All right. I'll move slowly.
Parrish moved his hand back from the gun, got his feet under him, and stood slowly. He felt like every eye in town was on him. If he had any thoughts of running, they had now fled. He flexed his fingers. They were a little stiff and sore, but they still worked. His arm was tired, but he felt like his years of practice and experience would still save him. He tried to calm his mind. Sam stood quietly, in a relaxed posture, his arms crossed in front of him. Parrish kneeled, picked up the gun belt. He had worn the belt and the gun for years. It felt familiar to him, almost comforting. Sam had gotten a few lucky breaks. How did he think he could beat Parrish at his own game? He strapped the belt around him. The weight of the holster against his thigh gave him even more confidence. He situated it just right, bent slowly with open palms to tie it down.
Let me check my gun, will you?
Sam nodded. Parrish noted that Matt was apparently watching him even closer than was Sam.
Damn those two.
Parrish moved his hand slowly and smoothly pulled his gun from his holster with fingers and thumb. The weight of the gun sent a new wave of optimism through him. He removed the shells, blew out any dust that might be in the chambers, and inserted new bullets. He carefully checked the action, cocking the gun. All the while, he was also watching Sam, who stood motionless, arms still crossed in front of him. This might be Parrish's only chance. Nobody could uncross his arms, draw his gun, and shoot faster than a man with a cocked gun already in his hand. In a smooth, fluid motion, almost faster than the eye could see, Parrish shifted position. The gun in his hand almost aimed itself at the man standing down the street from him. Parrish was pulling the trigger when he felt the first slug hit him in the chest. He couldn't believe his eyes. Sam had also shifted his position, and his hand dropped to his own gun. He pulled it and fired the first shot in a blur of motion that didn't register with Parrish until the lead hit him. He pulled the trigger, but the bullet hitting him ruined his aim. The shot went wide and high. The gunfighter looked down in disbelief as blood started to squirt from his chest onto the street. He tried to shoot again, but the gun was heavy in his hand and fell into the dirt. As Parrish collapsed, he saw that Matt had also pulled his gun, but had not shot. Sam stood quietly as Parrish fell to the street. Matt also watched until he was certain Parrish would not make another move. He holstered his gun and walked over to Sam.
One down. How many more to go?
At least two. I don't think Caphorn will back off. My guess is he's getting paid big bucks by Jordan. This demonstration might stop some, but from what I heard about Caphorn, I doubt if it'll stop him.
And I don't think Jordan will back off either. I have an idea he's going to pull something, but heck if I know what. With some of the town against him, or at least neutral after your show at his mine, his options are more limited.
The crowd started milling around.
Somebody clean up this mess, will you?
At first, it looked as if nobody would follow Sam's request. Finally, some of the crowd picked up Parrish's body to carry it away. At the hotel, Jordan had stepped inside, followed by Strep and Caphorn. Nelson Jordan's face was grim as he faced his men in his office.
I've had enough.
I've had it up to my neck, and I won't stand it anymore.
The others in the room looked down at Jordan. Strep's bruised face had turned a splotchy black and blue. His hands were still steady, however, and he had a look in his eyes that Jordan could not read. Grant, his other key man, had so far managed to avoid getting hurt in the various confrontations with Hart, Matt, and Sam. He was still eager to help. Phil Caphorn looked bored with the whole thing.
Talk's cheap. So far, all I've seen is that they beat the crap out of you. So what are you going to do in return?
Jordan gestured at Strep.
Now's the time to blow the dam. I want all of Hart's operations destroyed. I want him ruined. I want him dead. I want all of his men dead. I'm out of patience.
You still think it's a good idea?
I think you're getting mighty big for your britches.
Maybe. Maybe not. I agreed to work for you, not be your slave. I've given you your money's worth. I think getting myself killed wasn't part of the agreement.
What do you mean?
For a while, you had things going your way. Now, Hart was the thorn in your side, but you had plenty of claims in your name and a mine started. You had plenty of people who would fight for you. Now it's not quite that simple. After the show that Sam and Hart gave at the mine, they've got a lot of support, even from your workers. If shooting starts, they'll sit out, if you're lucky. Hell, I have half a mind to ride on myself.
So I was right. You are a traitor. You're siding with my enemy.
I'm still on your payroll. I just think you need to be warned this is not going to be a picnic.
A picnic? Who's talking about a picnic?
Jordan turned to the door, where Melinda was smiling sweetly. Her dress was dirty and her hair had worked loose, but she was smiling happily.
Nobody invited you. You're a traitor, too, joining up with a no-account drifter Bodine.
That's not fair. I just wanted to let you know that if you want me to sing tonight, I will be...
You'll do what I tell you. I said you don't belong here. Go back to your room. I'll take care of you later.
Melinda glared with hatred at Jordan, but turned on her heels and left. Melinda was hurt, and she was angry. Though she had some problems with Jordan in the past, it was as if the slap had opened her eyes to other parts of him. They were parts she hadn't wanted to see before. She quietly put her ear close to the door to listen to the talk.
There was no calling for that.
You just shut up! You've always been too uppity. I don't want any more argument. Here's the plan. We blow up the dam tonight. The water will rush through the streets and into Hart's land. That should cause plenty of destruction, but I want more than that now. During the confusion, I want as many of Hart's men as possible to be picked off.
Aren't you forgetting something?
You mean Bodine and Two Wolves?
Of course. They're not going to just be sitting around twiddling their thumbs and their hell on wheels.
Well, that's what Caphorn is here for. He'll take care of those two. And by the end of tonight, they'll all be dead. That'll clear the way for me to grab up Hart's claims and work this area like a real businessman.
Melinda pulled her head back from the door. She had been so wrong about Jordan. She hesitated for a second. She still felt some loyalty to him, but she had to draw the line at so many innocent lives being lost. Inside the room, somebody started for the door. Melinda had to make her decision quickly. She hurried out the back door to try and find Matt. Jordan turned to Strep.
Can you go along with this plan, or are you going to fight me on it?
I had doubts, but I'll finish this job for you.
Good. Go on out and get the explosives ready.
Jordan handed a slip of paper to Strep.
My mining engineer drew up a diagram for me, showing potential weak spots. He thought I was looking into a safety project. Actually, you put explosive at these points, and that whole dam is guaranteed to give way.
Strep took the paper. Jordan looked at the remaining two men.
Well?
Strep's not a traitor. Maybe some of his decisions aren't to your liking, but he's not going to betray you.
What's your thoughts, Caphorn?
Can't trust him. Whether he opposes you openly or not, he has his doubts. He's going to drag his feet. He's going to make mistakes. I think you should get rid of him.
Do it.
It'll mean more money.
Fine. Just do it. As soon as he sets the explosives, make it look like he died in the explosion. I doubt if anybody will ever investigate this, but no use taking chances. We don't want to get sloppy. Grant, how many men remain loyal to me?
I don't know. Maybe half a dozen, maybe a dozen. In the cover of darkness, it'll be enough.
Then get to it.
Make sure they're ready when the dam gives way.
Darkness was falling. Melinda wasn't exactly sure where Matt and Sam would be at this hour, but she had a guess. She knew that Hart and his men often met after hours at a little saloon owned by a man named Clancy. He was the one that Matt said made the wine that they had drunk on their picnic. It was only a little while ago, though it seemed like days. Melinda wished she had time to get cleaned up and change, but there was not enough time. She didn't know when the dam was going to blow, and she didn't want to take any chances. When she got to Clancy's saloon, she hesitated again. She still had time to turn back. If she entered through the front door, then somebody would see her and report back to Jordan. It was now or never. Matt and Sam were seated at a table with Hart, Shanahan, and a few other men. Most of the men were drinking beer. Matt was the first to see her.
Melinda, what are you doing here?
I've got something important to tell you.
If it's personal, we can leave.
No, it's nothing like that. Jordan plans to kill you.
That's not news. We've been waiting for him to make his play.
Not just you, Sam and Matt, but Hart, and as many of his men as he can shoot.
Might be easier said than done. He hasn't done such a hot job so far.
No, you don't understand. He plans to blow the dam.
Matt stood up and took her hands in his.
Slow down. What exactly does Jordan plan to do?
He's going to blow the dam.
And what will that accomplish?
I can answer that. The way the dam's built, water is diverted from this area, making digging operations possible for Jordan and for myself. But Jordan is better capitalized. He thinks he can rebuild after. Well, I'd be ruined.
Would you?
I don't know. It'd be a severe setback. What's worse is the men it could hurt or kill. There's lots of people camping in the path of the flood. And my men who are working in the area could be killed.
So that explains why he was moving his men to higher ground. I should have thought of that.
Melinda, when do they plan to blow up the dam?
I don't know. I overheard the talk. I didn't hear everything that was said. I think they're going to do it tonight. They also plan to have some sharpshooters stationed around town to pick off as many of Hart's men as possible in the confusion. Caphorn is to get Matt and Sam.
I'm going to the dam. Sam, would you and Hart do what you can to get as many to safety as possible?
You got it.
Melinda had not yet let go of Matt's hands.
Matt, I have a favor to ask you.
All you need to do is ask.
Try to take it easy on Jordan. I know it looks pretty bad for him, and I know he deserves to be punished. I'm not sure he deserves to be killed. I know it's stupid, but he has been good to me in the past, and I would hate to be the one who caused him to be killed.
Don't worry, Melinda. I won't kill him in cold blood, nor will Sam. You have my word on that.
Thank you.
Now I want you to get back to the hotel. I want you someplace relatively safe when the shooting starts. This is one time you won't be able to help. No matter what happens, please stay in your room. I don't want your singing career cut short by a stray bullet.
Matt watched Melinda walk down the street through the open saloon door.
No figuring women, is there?
I never found a way.
Here's a woman who may be risking her life by warning us of Jordan's plan. Yet her final request to you is not to be too hard on Jordan. How can she have it both ways?
Ours is not to reason why. It's just to be confused as hell.
So true.
You know where the dam is?
I've seen it on some of my rides. Anything special I should know about it?
Not really. It's just a lot of earth and logs. It's pretty sturdy, but it wouldn't take much of a jolt for it to come crashing down.
Y'all try and warn everybody. Watch out for Jordan's men taking pot shots at you. I'll try and join y'all when I can, if I can.